When I was a young man, I got a job in sales and I spun my wheels for about 6 months because I had no idea what I was doing. I got the three-part sales training program. Here's your cards, here's your brochures, there's the door. And after a month, I got the first motivational program, which was hang in there. After 2 months, I got the final motivational program, which usually does the trick, which was if you don't sell something pretty soon, we're going to have to fire you. Now, this time I was working on straight commission, cold calling, going from door to door, office to office in the daytime, and from apartment to apartment and house to house in the neighborhoods in the evening, trying to sell. I had to get paid a commission every time I made a sale because I had to rush back to my boarding house and pay my landlady, or she'd throw my stuff out on the street. She was ex-Gestapo. She had a motto, no pay, no stay. So I was desperate. I got no sales training. I got no advice, no encouragement, because the person who had hired me didn't know any of the things that you know. Eventually, what I did is I went to the most successful guy in the company, and I said, what are you doing differently from me? And he told me, and I did it. He showed me that there's a logical sales presentation. There's a logical and orderly process of separating prospects from suspects, establishing rapport, identifying needs, presenting the product, answering objections, closing the sale, getting resales and referrals, and so on. And so I began to sell systematically, and it transformed my life. My sales went up and up. I began to read and listen and learn and ask more questions. And then, what you might imagine, they made me a sales mangler. They said, you know, whatever you're smoking, you should find some more people and share it with them. So they made me a manager, and I began recruiting people. And I began teaching them the process that I learned, and then making sure that they applied the process. Within another year, I had people in six countries. I had 95 salespeople generating millions of dollars a month. I went from rags to non-rags. I went from living in a boarding house to having apartments in three cities, flying around on jets. I had two bank accounts. I never had less than $1,000 in my pocket. And it all came from learning the secrets of successful sales management. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, when IBM got into trouble in the early 90s, in the 80s, it was the most respected, one of the most profitable companies in the world. By the early 90s, they were talking about breaking up the company. They brought in McKinsey & Company, one of the top management consulting firms in the world, and they asked them to do a diagnosis. In other words, what's wrong with this company? And they came back after about 2 or 3 months and $2 or $3 million, and they said, we found your problem. They said, what is it? They said, it's low sales. They said, well, that's great. What's the solution? They said, well, it's high sales. And he said, well, this is really helpful. What's the problem? He said, the problem is your sales managers are not doing their jobs. They're staying in the office most of the time while the salespeople are drifting around in the field. You've got to get your sales managers out in the field with your people. So it brought about an enormous transition in IBM that caused them to turn around in the marketplace, go from hundreds of millions of dollars in losses to hundreds of millions of dollars in profits, transform the company, and if you had bought IBM stock at its low point, you wouldn't have to be on this call today. You'd be rich and retired. And what they found in the McKinsey & Company report was that the sales manager was the pivotal skill in any sales based organization. You could change the president and the vice president and everybody in every other area, but the sales manager was the field commander. He was the one, or she was the one, that determined whether or not the company was successful, whether it won battles, whether it made sales quotas, whether it hit its numbers on a regular basis. So you, as sales managers, whether you manage one person or a team, have the most important jobs in American business. Your job is so important that if you do it well, it opens and kicks open every opportunity in our system. You can make more money. You can be promoted faster. You can move up the ranks. You can become financially independent. Many of you will become self-made millionaires because of your ability to be an excellent sales manager. And my job is to give you some of the most important tools that you can use to put yourself onto the fast track. So we say that the sales manager is one of the most important and often the least appreciated executives in the company. The reason for this, by the way, is it used to be that the sales manager was sort of like a job of last resort. They'd say, well, there's old Harry. He can't sell. Nobody likes him. He's too old to train for something new. Let's make him sales manager. And so many salespeople ended up under a sales manager who was incompetent, lazy, indifferent, didn't know the job, couldn't give valuable advice, gave the wrong instructions, and so on. So the rule is that nothing happens until a sale takes place. It's the sales manager who sets the standards for the salespeople, and the development of excellent sales managers is an essential requirement for all successful business enterprises. It absolutely amazes me. I have worked with small companies, medium-sized companies, and many Fortune 500 companies. Every Fortune 500 company has exhaustive, detailed, multi-day, multi-week intensive training programs for their sales managers. All mediocre companies do not. Most mediocre companies say, well, he's a good salesman, make him a sales manager, which is often the biggest mistake they can make. And then they just walk away and they wonder why their competition, who are training their sales managers like training athletes for the Olympics, their competition just eats them alive. The best companies I've ever worked for have the best sales managers, and they don't take it for granted because they know that the sales manager is the key. It's like the sales manager is the coach. The coach is often the key to winning the game. So here are the six roles of the sales manager. Number one role is to set goals and objectives. And you know from listening to me in the past, I'm a fanatic on goals, and my favorite word in success is the word clarity. Is that we need to set very, very clear goals and objectives for everybody in the company. By the way, we did a series of surveys, both pre-job, job, and post-job interviews with salespeople. We find that the number one reason why people join a company is because of the sales manager. The number one reason why people stay with the company, good salespeople, is because of the sales manager. The number one reason that salespeople, especially good salespeople, leave a company is because of the sales manager. Here is a very interesting observation. People don't quit companies, they quit people. And the interesting thing is, the better the person is, the faster they will walk if they're not happy with the way that they're being managed. So therefore, the sales manager is really important. And clear goals and objectives are the number one motivator for people in the world of work, is to know exactly what's expected of them in numerical form so that there's absolutely no doubt. The flip side, by the way, is the number one demotivator in the world of work is not knowing what's expected. So that's your first job. The second role of the sales manager is to make action plans to achieve the sales goals. Now, action plans are written. You sit down and you say, my goals for this month, this quarter, this year are so-and-so. In order to achieve this, I will need to get this level of sales. In order to get this level of sales, I need this number of people. I need this amount of advertising in order to generate this number of leads. We'll need to have this many prospects in order to turn them into this many customers. In other words, you think it through, and here's the rule. Think on paper. Think on paper. All the top managers think on paper. They have it written down. Sometimes they'll look and they say, geez, I need to generate $1 million in sales. I've got four salespeople. The most any of these have ever generated is $150,000 each. That means I can't get there from here. I'm not going to make it with my existing sales force. I'm going to have to either upgrade the sales force or increase its size or get more and better leads. But if you think on paper, it becomes clear to you what you have to do, what you have to accomplish. Now, number three role of the sales manager is to organize, analyze, divide, and allocate the work to individuals and groups. In other words, you determine how much you have to sell. Let's say it's $1 million, and let's say you have 10 people. Well, that doesn't mean that each person is expected to sell $100,000 each, because people with limited experience may only be able to sell 25. People with extensive experience may be able to sell 250. So your job is to think through and to hand out allocations. All right, you're responsible for this amount of our sales quota. You're responsible for this. Based on your experience and what you've done in the past, this is what I expect from you. And then you manage by numbers. You manage and motivate by numbers. So number four role of the sales manager is to motivate and communicate. Now people say, well, I'm not a motivator. Some of the very best motivators are very low-key people. They're friendly, they're easygoing, and the key to motivation is just to ask questions. How's it going? Listen carefully to the answers. Encourage people to, you know, get out there and get going. Have a good day. Good luck. Hang in there. Keep at it. Just little things like that. The same things that you would tell your kids if they were playing baseball and they're coming to the sidelines in a game where, you know, they're having tough competition. Motivating and communicating means that you just continue to communicate. Now, here's an interesting point. Men tend to be very short in their communications. They just don't talk a lot. But women tend to be much better and more fluent communicators. When you have women in your sales force, they need more communication, more instruction, more one-on-one back and forth than men do. Men need to be told, you know, make 10 calls today, get out there, kick some butt. And that's all they need. Women need a little bit more instruction. They need a little bit more time. Women need to be managed differently. By the way, women are rising to the top of almost every sales force of value today in the world. So it behooves us to really treat women well because they have the ability to score at extraordinary levels. But the critical thing for them is communications, relationships, friendliness with their manager. The better any salesperson feels about his or her manager, the more they'll sell. The more confidence they'll have, the more they'll bounce back from rejection, the more resilient they'll be, the more optimistic they'll be, and so on. So the better a relationship, the more you communicate with your staff, the better it is. Got to tell you an interesting story. I took over a sales force once that was completely demoralized. And so I decided for 2 weeks I was going to have sales meetings morning and afternoon with the whole sales force. But the sales force was about 40 people, so I divided them into four groups of 10 each. And I had the first group come in at 7, the second group at 7:30, the third group at 8, the fourth group at 8:30. And then for 30 minutes, I would talk to them, talk about the day, give them some ideas, give them some encouragement, give them some guidance and instruction, send them out. I do this in the morning 4 times, and then in the evening, starting at 4:30, then 5, then 5:30, then 6, the groups would come in, and we do a debrief of the day. I did that morning and night for 2 weeks. That sales force turned around and became one of the most powerful sales forces in the world organization, and solely because of the regular communication and interaction. So if ever you find that you're having problems with your sales force, start having regular meetings. I worked for the company once some years later, and this company had sales meetings Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. They had them from 8 to 9, not 8:01, but from 8 to 9. Nobody was late. If you were late, it was serious. They'd often lock the door from the inside, and you'd have to sit outside and wait. So from 8 to 9, 3 days a week, everybody came to that meeting, and everybody went out of that meeting just supercharged. And that company used that system in every city they opened an office. And in every city within 1 year, they were the best top-selling sales organization in the industry. But one of their main factors was they held meetings all the time. I remember once I worked for a company that was having all kinds of problems, and I did a talk for them. And I had just worked for one of their competitors. And this other competitor was the top of the industry, burning up all sales records, had tremendous motivation, beating every quota. And they had meetings 2 or 3 times a week, and they had me in there all the time. Well, when I went with this other company, they had not had a sales meeting for 2 years. It was the first time this group had been together from different offices in 2 years. And I said to them, I said, how often do you guys get together? They said, well, you know, the company's getting a little bit crazy. Suddenly we're having all these meetings. I said, pardon me? You know, we had a meeting 4 years ago and then 2 years ago, and now we're having another meeting. I mean, we're having all these meetings. And that company was so demoralized, the company eventually went broke. So meetings are really powerful. Number 5 role of sales manager is to measure results against plans and forecasts. You know, there's a rule that says that you must inspect what you expect. Is you can't manage what you can't measure. So if you're going to be a good sales manager, it doesn't mean you beat people with the club, but you get agreement on what they're supposed to do, and then you measure their results against their plans and forecasts. You just measure the results against the plans and forecasts, and you keep reporting back. I worked for a company once that once a month they would bring in a sales chart for every salesperson in the company, and they would show it to everybody. And it showed exactly where you were relative to your last month, showed exactly where you were relative to your year, and it showed exactly where you were relative to all the salespeople. And they just held them up and showed them to everybody. And so you could see it, and everybody else could see how you were doing. They didn't say much more than that, but I'll tell you, if your sales were down, that next month you became a fury. You were so determined that when they showed your chart next month, it was different from what it was the month before. The 6th role of the sales manager is to develop and manage people. Now, it's interesting, when you start off as a salesperson, you manage yourself individually. When you become a sales manager, your job is to manage a team. When you're an individual, you develop yourself. When you're a team manager, you develop other people. So your job is to develop and manage them. And that is an ongoing thing. You do it every day, every week, every month. It never stops. You're constantly developing and managing people. You're constantly, like a teacher, giving them guidance and encouragement. Well, there are six ways to build a winning sales team. And these come, by the way, from the studies of sports teams that have won the championships, won the Super Bowl, won the NBA. They come back, and what they do is they've looked at how those teams function different from how teams that lose function. And they found that there's six particular ways to build a sales team. Number one is the top teams have clear coaching and leadership. Now, what this means is that you're the boss. You're in charge. You are the manager of the sales team. Is laissez-faire does not work in running a sales team. Running a sales team is very much like running a fire drill. It's like running a SWAT team. It's very, very clear that you're the boss, is that you make the decisions. You may invite input. You may discuss things with people. But when push comes to shove, you make the decisions of what's going to be done and what's not going to be done, what's going to be started and what's going to be stopped. Everybody knows who the boss is. Very important. Now, number two is winning teams have a commitment to excellence. Their commitment is to be the best. And one of the most important subjects you can bring up in your regular meetings is, what do we have to do to be the best in our industry? What do we have to do to be the best sales force in our business? How could we improve? And there's a little expression you can use. It's called CANEI, C-A-N-E-I, which means continuous and never-ending improvement. Your job is to get everybody to dedicate themselves to continuous and never-ending improvement. I have worked with companies that just did one thing, is they had a sales training session every week for 1 hour. They used my sales training videos, which, by the way, are some of the most popular in the world, and they used my workbooks and workbook materials, and once a week they'd have a 1 hour sales training session. They'd discuss the subject, they'd play the video, and they'd discuss how they were going to apply the video ideas back on the floor, back in selling with their customers. Then they go back to work. They found that the biggest sales day of the year was always the day after the 1 hour sales training. And they only did 1 hour a week. And this company led every other division in the company worldwide. They had people flying from London and Australia to visit this company to find out what the heck these people were doing that enabled them to break every sales record. They said, no secret, we just train our people 1 hour a week. So it doesn't take a lot. It's not like you have to train your people like a fire department training hours every day. It's not like marine training to attack the beaches. An hour a week is enough. And then during that week, you kind of just talk and say, how's it going? And how are you using that material? And how is it helping you? And so on. So commitment to excellence is the key. There's nothing more motivational for a salesperson than to know that he or she works for a company that is committed to excellence. People just love that feeling. The third key to building a winning sales team is open communications. That means that people feel free to express themselves openly and honestly without criticism or condemnation or fear of getting fired. There is a direct relationship between how free people feel to express themselves and how dynamic the sales team is. In fact, you can always tell the quality of the relationship between two people by how open they are and how free they feel to say what's on their mind. So a good sales manager, when people are upset or angry or have something to say, just let them vent. And at a certain time, you could say, well, then we should do something about that and let me think about that, or that's a good idea. Don't contradict them. Don't shut them down. Just listen. And remember, here's something I learned. It's just because people complain and you listen doesn't mean you have to do anything. You don't have to do anything. You just have to listen. Encourage open expression. Yes, that's right. I know the advertising didn't work. Right. The market's tough. Yes. Competition just cut their prices. I know there's a recession and so on. Major customers are holding back. In other words, just be sympathetic. Just listen. And the more people feel free to be able to talk to you openly when they go out to sell, the more wind there is in their sails, the more confidence they have, the more determined they are, because they really feel that people back in the office, especially you, listen to them. Now, the fourth key to building a winning sales team is intensive people development focus. There's nothing that causes a person to be more dedicated to a company than to feel that that company wants them to succeed. They're dedicated to help them learn more and be better and make more money. You know, whenever I was a sales manager, I would say, tell me how much money you want to earn in the next year. And they'd always come up with a big number. I'd say, well, that's a good number. That's more than you've ever earned before. But I'll tell you what, my commitment is to help you make that money. I will give you every single bit of support and guidance. I will give you audio programs and training and feedback and coaching. I'll give you everything possible. My goal is to help you achieve your goal. And wow, is that motivational. Do people ever love it when their manager is committed to them being as successful as they possibly can? So you just keep coming back. And when a person's not doing particularly well, say, well, you know, we've got to get back on track. We've got to get you to the point where you achieve your goal. I mean, we've got to make that money for you, right? In other words, you take it personally, the kind of money that they want to earn, and wow, will they ever be devoted to you? Will they ever be devoted to winning once they get out onto the field? The fifth key to building a successful sales team is selective assignments. You find in sports, by the way, a good coach will assign people based on their talent, their ability, their experience. It's the same way. A good sales manager will assign people based on their talent and ability. And if it's not working, they'll reassign them. Maybe they'll assign them to a different market, or they'll give them a different quota, or they'll give them different training, or have them work with different customers, or sell different products and services. But always be very sensitive to what it is your salespeople need and want. And if it's not working out, just assign them differently. The sixth key to building a top team is heavy emphasis on planning and strategy. Now, I can't tell you how important this is, going back to what I always say, you know, goals, goals, goals. But you'd be absolutely amazed if you have everybody in your sales team sit down with a piece of paper in front of them and have them write 10 goals on a piece of paper and then have them circle the most important goal. And almost always for salespeople, it will be a financial goal. And then put that financial goal on the top of another page and say, what are all the things that you can do to achieve that goal? And then lead a discussion. Have them write it out, give them 5 minutes to write down 10 or 20 answers, and lead a discussion. What are the things we can do to achieve our sales goals, our financial goals? Get people thinking about their goals. Talk about their goals. Talk about their plans. Talk about the actions they can take. Of all the things you could do, what's the most important thing you could do if you want to hit this goal? And keep emphasizing that. So people keep thinking in terms of their goals and how to achieve them. They keep thinking in terms of planning and strategy. Well, one of the most important parts of being a sales manager is selecting good salespeople. We call this selecting sales champions. In fact, I was on the phone today interviewing with a client. I'm doing a talk for 60 of their top national managers from all over the country. All these people have 30, 40, 50 people under them as salespeople. And I said, what would you like me to talk about? And they said, please, talk to these people about selection. There's nothing more important than picking the right salespeople. Well, as it happens, I have hired and fired and managed and motivated dozens of sales forces. I have worked with over 500,000 managers and probably over a million, maybe 2 million salespeople. I've worked with over 500 companies. I have read books and articles. I've created some of the best sales management and training programs in the world that have been translated into multiple languages. And I don't mean to brag, but I know a little bit about this. Here's what we know. Number one, with regard to the importance of the selection process, 95% of your success or failure as a sales manager will be determined by your ability to select the right people. Just like 95% of the success of the coach will be determined by his ability to select the team. Your job is to spend a lot of time selecting your people. 95% of your success. So we say, number two, we say take your time. Select slowly. Don't be in a hurry. There's a rule that says, select in haste, repent at leisure. Harvey McKay, in his book, Swim with the Sharks, talks about looking for a new salesperson for his company. Large multi-million dollar company, 20, 30 salespeople. He interviewed 35 candidates and hired nobody. Why? He said, it's much better to hire nobody than to hire the wrong person and then have to go back and rectify it afterwards. When I was talking to one of my clients recently, because I had said that on one of my audio programs, he said, you know, he said, I was listening to Brian's program and I listened to that part. He said, and I've been looking for a salesperson for 3 months and I decided not to hire anybody. And they all cheered and high-fived. They said, you're absolutely right. Better to hire nobody than to hire the wrong person. So what you do is you just interview more people. You select slowly, take your time, think it through. Because number three, we find that poor selection is expensive and sometimes it's very expensive. It's not only expensive in terms of the amount of energy and emotion that you put into hiring. You do the interviewing, you meet with a person, you meet with them again, you hire them, you then try to get them to perform, they don't work out, you have to dehire them, you go through the stress of that, then you have to start over, find a new person, and so on. So it's not only hard on you in terms of time and emotion, but the rule is that it costs 3 to 6 times a person's annual earnings or salary off the bottom line for every mishire. Now you say, well, how can it be? Well, first of all, there's the lost time that you spend in hiring that person, and your time has a value. There's the lost productivity of that person while you're training them. There's the lost productivity of another person who, if you had hired the right person, would have been bringing you sales and meeting quotas. There's the lost time of others. There's also the lost energy of others in terms of demotivation when you have high levels of turnover. What we've learned is this, is companies that have the lowest level of turnover are the most profitable. Companies that have the highest level of turnover are the ones that are in financial trouble. So the very act of dramatically improving the pace and the accuracy of your hiring dramatically reduces your costs and increases your profitability. So point number four is think through the job. Take a piece of paper, and this is what I do, is I would take a piece of paper and I say, what would the ideal salesperson look like? And I'll make a list of everything that I could think of that I would love to have in the perfect salesperson. And of course, the first thing on the list is successful sales experience selling my product or service to the type of people that would buy it with another company. I'll also write terms of, you know, personable, attractive or intelligent, friendly, non-smoker, lives close to the office, highly motivated, committed, high levels of integrity, computer fluent, very competent with prospecting, skilled in selling. I'll write all of these things down. And then I'll go back over the list. And here's what I have actually found. There's three qualifications on the list that will account for 90% of the success of that person. There's three qualifications. One will be a great personality. The second will be tremendous success selling my product or service somewhere else. Number three will be, you know, high character, something like that. It'll always be three things that will account for most of the value of the person. Now, when you interview, start looking for those three things. Make a note. Have the list in front of you. And when you interview, listen for them. And one of my rules is this, is if you have any bad feeling about a candidate, don't hire them. When I worked with Hewlett-Packard as an outside speaker and consultant, I learned an interesting thing. Is Hewlett-Packard would interview a candidate a minimum of 7 times. That person would be interviewed by a minimum of 4 managers who would be the kind of managers who would supervise that person. At the end, the 4 managers would get together and say, what do you think? If one manager did not feel comfortable about the candidate was ruled out and never interviewed again. All it took was one bad gut feeling on the part of 1 of 4 managers. And Hewlett-Packard has one of the lowest turnover rates of people in the world and one of the highest levels of morale and productivity. So think about it. Now, the fifth key to hiring good people is to apply the law of three. Now, the law of three says that you have to slow down your tendency to be impulsive when you hire someone. So the law of three says, first of all, never hire anybody the first time you talk to them. The first time you talk to a person, they are going to be the very best they will ever be in their whole lives. They're going to look the best, sound the best, dress the best, come across the best. So therefore, if you're not careful, you'll allow your emotions to carry you away and you'll think, wow, this is a great person, and you'll start to hire them. And so the rule is, don't start selling till you've decided to buy, and don't decide to buy until you've seen the person at least 3 times. By the way, the point that I was making there is very often in interviewing, we start off selling the person on the company, telling the person what a good company it is, what a good job it is, what a good product it is, what a good market it is. And the rule is it should be reversed. The person should have to sell you first that they are the right person before you start to sell them on your company being the right place. So the law of three says interview a candidate that you like at least 3 times. So if you like the person, and I've done this, I've interviewed a person in the morning and again in the afternoon and again the next day. In other words, you can shorten up the process. Sometimes I'll interview the person a few days apart, but give yourself time to interview and you'll find a person that you like in the first interview looks average, the second interview looks dreadful, and the third interview. In the third interview, you say to yourself, I cannot imagine what was in my mind when I first thought of hiring them the first time I spoke to him or her. The second part of the law of three is interview the person in 3 places. The first interview may take place in your office. The second interview could take place down the hall in a meeting room. The third interview could take place across the street for a cup of coffee or lunch. I remember once almost hired a woman, and in the office, she was fantastic, a very nice person. When I took her down the hall and introduced her to other people and spoke to her, great. And so I had her come back the next day and offered to take her out for lunch. By the time I finished having lunch with her, there's something about having a meal with a person. I could not imagine what I was thinking when I thought of hiring them. Hewlett-Packard, by the way, always includes taking the spouse and his or her other out for dinner and observing them and how they behave before they hire them. They think it's a social occasion. It's actually part of the interview process. Just take a person out for lunch and just have lunch with them. Sit there, order, see them bring the food, listen, watch, talk. Don't even talk about business. I say you'll be absolutely amazed. Once I was being considered for a major consulting job by a billion-dollar corporation, and I was in the office of the president on the top floor of this massive building. The company had tens of thousands of employees, stores all over the country. And we're talking about my coming in and doing a strategic planning program to determine the future direction of the company. And in the middle of the conversation, he said, would you like to go for a walk? And I said, sure. So he said, great. And he picked up the phone. He spoke into the phone. He said, well, let's go. And we took the elevator down to the ground floor, went out. His chauffeur-driven car was there. The chauffeur took us to a large public park, large city park, and he said, let's go for a walk. So we walked around the park for an hour, just chatting. And we came in a complete circle back to the car, and he said, okay, the job is yours. We got back in the car, drove back to the office, and I worked for that company for 2 years. What he wanted to do was just move me around and see me in a different location, in his office, in the elevator, in the car, in the park. Most amazing. So move people around. The third key to the law of three is have whoever you want to hire interviewed by at least three people. In my company, before we hire anybody, everybody in the company, and we have 10 people, 10, 12 people, everybody in the company gets to talk to them. And then afterwards, we say, well, what do you think? And a person looks fantastic when they're talking to you. It may look dreadful when they're talking to someone else because they let their hair down. All their guard is down when they're talking to another fellow worker. Another critical point is if you have other salespeople interview a salesperson before you hire them, if they all say, this is a good person, we like this person, we think you should hire them, when you do hire that person, they will all get together and work to help that person be successful. And they'll have a much greater esprit de corps, feeling of teamwork. So remember, interview people three times, interview them in three places, and have at least three people interview them before you make a decision. From this day forward, never hire by yourself. Never hire without the opinion of other people. Number six is interview for previous successes. The very best predictor of future performance is past performance. You're looking for a person who has already won. One of the things we know is that Fortune 500 companies can hire people out of school with no experience and train them. They've got the weeks and the months and the years because they're looking upon hiring these people for a lifetime. Small and medium-sized companies must only hire people with proven track records who can do the job. If the person has not been successful in the past, they are not going to be successful with you, no matter what they say, no matter what they promise. So ask them, what have been your biggest successes in the past? What did you accomplish? What did you do? What did you achieve? And then those are what you check. When you check on resumes, you check to see if those answers were true. Number seven, explain the job in detail. One of the things I would do is I would explain the job in detail. This is exactly what you will be required to do. This will be your standards of performance. These will be your quotas. This will be the way the work is done. And I say, now, just to make sure that you're clear, long before we do any hiring, by the way, I say, now, feedback to me what I just told you. Describe the job to me that I just described to you. And listen. And you will be absolutely astonished. 50% of people that you just explained it to cannot explain it back to you. They weren't listening. They weren't paying attention. They don't want the job the way you described it. It's the most amazing thing. So you can try it again. Well, let me explain one more time and then try it again and you'll be absolutely amazed. Only if a person can feedback to you what the job is, what they will be selling, who they'll be selling it to, what the job requirements are, how much they will earn, what their standards of performance are. If they can't feed it back to you, just rat-a-tat-a-tat, it's a warning sign that this may be the wrong person. Number eight in selecting sales champion, check references by telephone. And the key to checking references, remember this, people don't want to talk about people that they've fired. So say, look, I'm a sales manager over here at ABC Company. I need your help. Off the record, can you tell me a little bit about the strengths and weaknesses of this person? He's applied to sell here. Can you give me any feedback or any ideas? Now, no matter what they say, and sometimes they've been instructed by their lawyers not to say anything except to confirm dates of employment, you can always ask one key question. And the question is this. Well, tell me, one last question is, would you hire this person back again if you had a chance? And just listen quietly. Don't say a word. Let the silence speak for itself. If the person says, yes, we'd hire this person back in a minute, that's a great sign. If the person will not commit, or they will say, no, I don't think we would, that is a red alert, red alert. And if you don't ask this question, you are really missing one of the most important of all interview questions. So, number 9 is look for self-selection. In a 30-year study of a major Fortune 500 corporation, they found that one of the best predictors of success is the person came to the company, and after talking to other companies and talking to you, they came back and they said, I really want to work here. I really want this job. I really want a chance to perform here. Self-selection turned out to be one of the greatest predictors of success that there was. If you have to coax a person and negotiate with a person and entice a person and call the person back to get them to take the job, then you just forget it. This person will quit you as soon as something better comes along. Okay, 6 ways to help them succeed. Number 1 is start them off right. No more of this sink or swim where you say, okay, you've got the job, go for it, good luck, got any questions, give me a call. Start them off right. Start them off with hands-on, careful direction and guidance. The time when they start, the very first day, is when they're the most impressionable and the most vulnerable to demotivation. The second thing this Fortune 500 company found was self-selection was number 1, starting them off right was number 2 to assure a great career for that person. So, number 2, provide them with thorough sales training. Here's the rule. You cannot expect a person to sell your product at a high level if you have not thoroughly trained them in selling the product. Now, here's the mistake that companies make. They think that product knowledge is sales training. No, no, no. Product knowledge is basic. It's like telling them where the bathroom is and how to get to work and where the telephone is and where they sit when they come in. That's basic knowledge. The most important knowledge that a salesperson needs to succeed is sales training. Apply the 80-20 rule. 20% of all sales is technical, product knowledge, and so on. 80% is sales skills, sales abilities, how to prospect, how to present, what to say on the telephone, how to open a conversation, how to determine whether this is a real prospect, how to identify needs clearly, how to present, how to answer objections. These are the critical skills, and they're all learnable, but they're all essential. And you can never send a person out without having thoroughly trained them in these skills. Now, number 3, assign the new salesperson to someone else for orientation. If you have the time or it's a small company, then you become their buddy. I call this the buddy system. You become the person who takes them under your wing and you work with them closely for at least the first month to guide them, to give them advice, to give them feedback, and so on. If you can't do it yourself, you assign them to someone else who can. Someone else who will adopt them and be their partner, be their touchstone, tell them how things are going, have lunch with them, go out with them, and so on. This is really, really important. Sometimes you can hire a really great person, but if you don't do this, they'll flounder and you think you've made a mistake. And you haven't made a mistake. It's like telling them you've got to make lots of phone calls, but then not telling them that you have a sophisticated phone system and to get out, you've got to push a code. So they sit there pushing the numbers, but they can't understand why they're not getting through. Number 4 way to make them succeed is accompany the new salesperson on initial presentations. In other words, either you or somebody else go out with them to visit customers for the first few times. The best sales organizations I know, either a top salesperson or the sales managers go out with them either for the first day or the first 3 days or even the first week. And they go out and they talk and the salesperson has a chance to watch them and then they do it next time, back and forth. They share ideas, they give feedback, and so on. 5th way to help them succeed is make the first sale for them and give them the sale. Make the first sale and give them the sale. This has such an incredible impact. It's like pushing down a dynamite detonator. It causes a person to become so excited about going out and making calls. It's amazing. So make the first call and turn it over to them and give them the full credit and the full commission and tell them, boy, you did a great job at that. Even if you did 90% of it, it doesn't matter. They've got to go home feeling I did it, because then the next day they know they've gone from positive thinking, which can be wishing and hoping to positive knowing. They know they can sell because they made a sale, because here it is. It's got their name on it. So it's really important. Now, number six is supervise and monitor the salesperson closely. Now, this is not sitting on their shoulder or being on their case. This is just showing them that you care. Keep in regular touch with them. Monitor performance regularly, every day. Check with them every day. I want you to come in here at 4:30. Let's talk about your day. What did you do? How did it work out? If you got any questions, who did you see? What did you say? What did they say back? How is everything going? In other words, sometimes talk to them in the morning for a few minutes. Sometimes talk to them in the afternoon for a few minutes. But monitor them closely, almost like a patient in a critical care where you go and check their pulse and monitor them, like the doctor comes by the bed every morning and does the check and so on. Do the same thing. And then B is give and get regular feedback. Ask for feedback. How's it going? How do you feel? What do you think about this? Give feedback on a regular basis and so on. Finally, give guidance and encouragement. Always encourage them. Say, boy, that's going great. You're doing a good job. I know it's tough at the beginning. One of the things I quote from Goethe is I say, you know, everything is hard before it's easy. It takes a long time to learn, but once you've learned, it gets easier and easier after that. So always be encouraging people. Salespeople are sensitive just like children. Keep building them up. So number five is set clear objectives and standards for each person. Remember what we said before, the greatest motivator is to be absolutely clear about what's expected? So define the job clearly. Make it measurable. Write it down. Tell them what they'll be expected to do day in and day out. Tell them what their sales targets are. Tell them what their quotas are. Tell them how much you'll expect them to be selling in a month, 2 months, 3 months. And even established salespeople, keep talking to them about their quotas. Keep focusing them on their targets. Salespeople love targets to focus on. Without them, they're like driving down the road and taking your hands off the wheel. They begin to drift. They socialize. They have coffee. They read the newspaper. They chat with their friends. They go for lunch. Keep them focused on the targets. Number two, describe the job in terms of the daily activities necessary to achieve the job. Now, the reason for this is that sales are unpredictable and out of the control of the salesperson. Some will buy, some won't. But sales activities are completely controllable. And if the person controls the activities, in other words, they engage in the necessary activities every hour of every day, the sales will take care of themselves. So keep them focused on the activities because you can track activities. Number of calls, number of visits, number of proposals, number of callbacks, number of sales reports. Those are all measurable and trackable and totally under the control of the salesperson. Salespeople love to have something they can control. And even if they're not making sales, if they're engaging in the right activities, the sales will follow. Number three is require daily and weekly call reports. If a person knows they have to report each day who they spoke to and report each week on their results, they're much more fastidious about going out there, talking to people and getting results. Not only that, when they write down their results, they're much more thoughtful about what they're doing, which makes it much more likely they'll improve every time. By the way, if you have new salespeople, be very fastidious about daily and weekly call reports. If you have professionals, you can let them go. Professionals have earned the right to do what they like, to go out, because they can direct themselves. So this is something that's sort of like letting go of the reins as people demonstrate that you don't need to be watching them all the time. Now, number four is review activities and results regularly. The paying of close attention to activities and results tells people that you consider them to be important. Whatever you consider to be important, your salespeople will consider to be important. If you don't regularly review and discuss them, what happens is they don't think it's important to them. Take a personal interest in your salespeople. This is really important. Top sales managers always ask them, how's it going? How's the family? How are the kids? I have a basic rule, by the way, in my office. I say kids come first, especially with the mothers in my office, but with fathers also. I always say this, if ever you have a problem with one of your children, they're sick, they have to be taken home, they have to go to a doctor, take the time off, take the child, take care of the child. Children come first. And you know something? I've never lost a minute's worth of productivity. Is the people who work for me respect that and never abuse it. And boy, do they ever perform when they're working. So something as small as that, saying, you know, your kids come first, they're most important, will cause people to be so loyal to you and so committed to doing a good job. It's absolutely wonderful. But the critical thing, just say, how are you doing? How's everything going? How's the family? How's your health? And then just listen closely to the answers. The fifth quality of top sales managers is they give their people considerable freedom within bounds. What salespeople like is freedom plus control. They like freedom to act within the control of specific quotas and daily activity targets. So once you've set the quotas and the targets, stand back and leave them free to figure out how to meet them by themselves. Well, there are six ways to reward sales performance. And remember, salespeople are inordinately influenced by rewards. First of all is achievement. The very act of making a sales target is a reward in and of itself, especially if you make a big thing of it. When a person comes back with a sale, you brighten up, you smile, you applaud, you slap them on the back, you shake their hand, you thank them. One of the most powerful rewards you can give a person for achievement is just saying thank you. Thank you. That was a great sale. We really appreciate it. Second, and perhaps the most important of all motivators, is money. No matter what anybody says, the biggest motivator for salespeople is more money. Every single company says, well, we're not going to try to motivate our people with money. We're going to motivate them with team goals and group incentives and things like that. Those companies immediately get into trouble. Salespeople love money. Every interview says, we like the trips, we like the awards, we like the prizes, but more than anything else, give us the money. You know, like the movie, show me the money. The third motivator is prizes, because prizes are symbols of status. A plaque, an award, a cup, anything that signifies status and achievement that other people can look at is a major motivator of salespeople. Recognition. Now, the most powerful of all recognition is in front of other people. The rule is always reward and praise people in public. Whenever they do something well, make a thing of it. Take the person down the hall right into the boss's office and say, look, I want to tell you what he or she just did. He or she just closed this sale with ABC Company. It's worth this amount. One of the most important things. And make a thing of it. So people go, wow, make a big thing of it. Recognition in front of others. Start every weekly meeting by talking about the people who've made sales in the last week. And if you can, go right around the room and say, John made this sale and Susan made that sale, and lead a hand of applause for each person individually before you start the sales meeting. So everybody gets applauded by everybody in the sales team, or almost everybody. Boy, oh boy, is that a motivator. And number five is attention. Paying close attention to them, asking them questions, listening to them, taking them out for lunch, having coffee with them is powerful motivators. And number six, the last motivator of all, is advancement, which is promoting people. And if you can't promote them into management, and be careful about that, because good salespeople are not necessarily good sales managers, you can promote them by giving them a bigger desk, giving them an office, giving them a desk in a better location, giving them a secretary, giving them their own parking space. Any kind of advancement that signifies an improvement in rank or status as a result of performance is a major motivator that will cause that person to perform even more in the future. Now, number eight, sales planning and sales activities. The rule is set a specific number of calls for each day. And say, I expect you to make 10 calls every day. So come in here at 9 o'clock, make the calls before you do anything else. Include leads plus cold calls. Leads that your company generates, if they do, cold calls in addition to that. Don't ever allow people to say, well, I'm just going to call on the leads that are supplied to me. Force them to move out of their comfort zone and call people that they don't know. Number three, require personal calls plus telephone calls. In other words, require that people go out and see people face to face as well as make telephone calls. Require that people cold call, maybe one day a week or one day a month, have them go out and cold call if you want to build courage and confidence. Number four is inspect what you expect. In other words, check on them and make sure they're doing it. Salespeople will always try to slide. We say salespeople are like children with better excuses. They'll always try to get around the restrictions. They'll always try to game your system. You've got to be on them, warm, friendly, attentive, but on them all the time. Number five, and require each salesperson to send thank you cards each day. I worked for a company one time that was having demotivation. The people were disorganized, sales were down, business was good. And so I said, let's initiate a system where every single salesperson has to send out 10 thank you cards at the end of each day. They have to sit down and write out 10 thank you cards to 10 prospects that they spoke to that day. Company provides the cards and pays the postage. Everybody has to come in at the end of the day, fill out 10 cards to 10 new people that they haven't spoken to before. The company will collect them and mail them. Do you know what? That company turned around on a dime. Within 2 or 3 weeks, the phones were ringing off the hook. People were motivated. People were calling because those people had to have 10 people to send out cards to. They had to get out there every day and go out and speak to 10 people. Now, number 9, practice the 80-20 rule in coaching and supervision, which means that you spend 80% of your time with the top 20% of your salespeople. You spend 20% of your time with the other 80%. We say you spend individual time with your high performers and you spend group time with low performers. And don't mix them up. Stop spending individual personal time with low performers who aren't producing. Because what that does is it rewards them and encourages them to be low performers. Your time is a major reward. You must allocate your time carefully. So therefore, if a person comes to you and they've got a problem or a complaint and they're a low performer, you say, look, bring it to the sales meeting and we'll discuss your question with everybody. But with top performers, sit down with them one-on-one, have coffee, laugh, talk. What it does, it rewards the top performers and it gives incentives to the poor performers to become top performers. Okay, discipline your salespeople in the right way. Number 10, make standards of performance clear and agreed upon. And review performance regularly, weekly, and monthly. In other words, keep repeating the standards. Like a coach, keep blowing the whistle, get it in the hoop, kick that ball. Keep reviewing performance and keep repeating the performance you expect. Always correct or discipline in private. Remember I said praise in public, but appraise in private. Never criticize a person in front of others. Here's the rule. Whenever you praise a person in front of others, it doubles the motivational impact on that person's behavior. Whenever you criticize them in front of others, it doubles the demotivation. So therefore, always praise them in front of other people, but take them aside, close the door, and say, just between you and I have a concern. Don't get angry. Don't be impassioned. Never criticize in anger. Always gently and say, you know, we need to change this. Agree on what is to change and by how much. Don't just say you're not making enough calls. Say, I want you to start making 10 calls every day before 11 a.m. every morning. Would you please commit to that and get agreement? Shake hands. In other words, be specific in the guidance that you give the person. Offer to help them with additional training and support and coaching. Say, look, I'll give you more coaching. I'll get you more Brian Tracy audio programs to listen to. I'll send you to that training program that's coming to town and so on. Offer to help in every way possible. And finally, be firm but fair. Always be firm but fair. Never get excited. Always be friendly. Don't hurt the person. Sometimes they're having a bad week. Sometimes they have family problems and so on. Always be their best friend if you like, but also be the boss. Now, how do you dehire poor performers? I wanted to get to this before we get to the end of this because it is so important to top sales managers. Is there's only two reasons for poor performance. Number one is lack of ability. And the other is lack of motivation. Lack of ability means the person can't do it. Lack of motivation means the person won't do it. Now, you should have figured this out in the hiring process. But very often, people will start off, as we say, in like a lion, out like a lamb. Sometimes people will start off well, and they'll go sideways on you. Some people will start off well, and they'll just stop performing. And sometimes you know the reason why, and sometimes you don't. But remember, your job, your responsibility as the commanding officer is to win battles, to get sales results, to make sure that people perform. And if they don't, you must belly up to the bar and deal with it. Now, here's the rule. The person who keeps an incompetent salesperson is himself or herself incompetent. In other words, everybody knows if people are incompetent. If you keep an incompetent person, you are not helping them, you're hurting them. And not only that, you are ruining your own career because you are sending a signal to everybody around you that you're incompetent and not deserving of command. It's so important that if you have a poor salesperson, remember, everyone is watching you. You demotivate your other salespeople by keeping a poor salesperson on the staff. You lower your reputation in the eyes of your bosses and you keep a poor salesperson on the staff. So remember, you're not doing anybody a favor. You're actually hurting yourself. 1/3 of salespeople or more will fail over time. Even 1/3 of the best salespeople will fail, so be prepared. In life, we say that you inhale and you exhale. As a sales manager, you hire and you fire. You inhale and you exhale. You hire and you fire. And firing is a normal and natural and expected part of your work. If you can't fire, then you have to quit your job and go back to the field. Number four is always dehire professionally. What does this mean? It means it's always low-keyed, it's never angry, never accusatory, never blaming. You always dehire like a professional. The way you do this is, remember, number five, always protect the self-esteem of the salesperson. Now, here's the rule, and I have studied this, and I have spoken on this all over the world. I've trained thousands of sales managers and other executives, and here's the rule. Once you decide to let a person go, don't dwell on why you're letting them go. Don't even talk about it. Don't say you did this and you did that and you didn't do this and you should have done that. It's too late for that now. What you do is over. And you've made the decision, so you protect their self-esteem. Because if you attack them by telling them what they did wrong, their self-esteem goes down. If their self-esteem goes down, they become angry and defensive. And they want to rush out and get a lawyer and sue you. Remember, you always dehire gently, professionally. Always fire people the way you would like to be fired if the shoe was on the other foot. Always fire people like you want to keep them as a friend later. And many of the best people you have in your life were people that either fired you or that you fired in the past. So what you do is you encourage him or her to find something more suitable. You encourage him or her to quit, resign, and go peacefully. And this is what I always say. I say, you know, I've given this a lot of thought, and I don't think this is the right job for you. And I think you'd be happier doing something else. And then I repeat that like a broken record. You know, I don't really think this is the right job for you. And I don't think that you're really happy here. And I think you'd be happier doing something else. And I want to encourage you to go somewhere else. And what we'll do is we'll work up a story. And we'll say you decided to resign for various reasons. And we won't tell anybody so that you can leave gracefully. You can leave professionally. And what you try to do is always make it an amicable separation. Now, if you can't and you have to fire the person and get them out of the office and take away their keys, then do that if that's necessary. But always try to make it amicable. But once you realize the person has no future in your company, ask yourself, would I hire this person back again? And if the answer is no, let them go. The rule with salespeople is this. The very best time to fire a salesperson is the first time it crosses your mind. The very best time to fire a salesperson is the first time it crosses your mind. The rule is hire slow and fire fast. Well, number 12, the six keys to building salespeople. Number one is practice unconditional positive regard. Always treat them like you care for them. Number two is physical contact. Shake hands with them when you see them. Pat them on the shoulder and give them encouragement. Pat them on the back. Just a little light touch on their shoulder. Touch their hand and say, you're doing a great job, has a tremendous effect on people. Eye contact. When you talk to them, look at them directly and smile. Eye contact feeds the soul of the person you're talking to. Number four is focused attention. If focused attention is listen really intently when they speak to you. Don't take telephone calls, sign documents, shuffle paper. When they talk to you, stop and swivel and focus in on them like a laser beam. It dramatically affects their self-esteem, raises their self-confidence, causes them to feel powerful, causes them to like you more, and so on. Build and reinforce their self-concept and their self-image. Always tell them when they're dressed well that they look good. Tell them they did a good job. Tell them they're looking great. Tell them that you're really pleased with how well they're doing. Tell them you're really proud of that sale. Thank them profusely. Constantly build people up. Remember, salespeople's emotions are very volatile. They're like a roller coaster. They're up and down. A salesperson can be up at the top today and the top salesperson in the world, and tomorrow they're down in the dumps and they think that they're no good. Your job is to be a stable, constant, positive force. Always, number six, finally, maintain a positive relationship. Always be cheerful. Even if you feel cross, even if you're upset or angry, even if your life has problems, remember, when you don the mantle of leadership, you must leave all your problems at home. You must always be positive, always be friendly, always be cheerful. Never talk about your fears and your doubts and your concerns and your worries about the market. Never get upset or angry. Always be relaxed and friendly. And finally, number 13, be a role model. Of all the things you can do as a sales manager, be a role model. Lead by example. Remember, people believe what you do far more than what you say. So set a standard for people. Start earlier, work harder, stay later, be the first one in, be the last one to go, take the shortest coffee breaks and the quickest lunches. Get out of the office with your people. Don't sit there behind the desk and tell people what to do. Get out there. Once a week, you should go out and make calls with each of your salespeople. Once a month, you should spend a day in the field with one or more salespeople. Visit clients. Talk to them. Watch, listen, observe, give feedback, and so on. Manage your time well. Plan and organize your time. Always work from a schedule. Show people that you think time management is important so that they will think time management is important. And finally, number 5, dedicate yourself to continuous learning. If you want your salespeople to upgrade their skills, you should constantly upgrade your skills as well. Imagine that everyone is watching you all the time. The mark of the superior person is that they always carry themselves as though everyone was watching, even though no one is watching. They say the mark of character is how you carry yourself when no one is watching you, when nobody sees. Your ability to recruit, manage, and motivate a superior sales team can be the key to your success in life. The job of the sales manager is the pivotal skill in every sales organization. Fortunately, this is a skill you can learn with regular practice and commitment. When you become a superior sales manager, your self-esteem and self-confidence will increase. You'll feel terrific about yourself, and you'll become one of the most valuable and important people in your organization. And I'm sure you will. Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.